Hello and welcome to another edition of the LinuxInstall.net podcast. This is episode number 113, recorded on Tuesday, June 3rd, 2014, DevOps Days. In this episode, we're going to talk about Brian's trip to DevOps Days in Pittsburgh. He says it rocked. We're also going to talk about Joe's ongoing struggles with third-party applications, i.e. not open source. Also, and we're going to give you guys some things to look at, places to go, and there are definitely going to be some links in the show notes, so you'll want to check those out for this episode. Again, this is episode 113. Let's get it going. This is LinuxInstall.net, episode number 113. Lucky number 113, I hope.
We'll see how lucky we are during this thing.
I am Brian Wagner, and with me is my faithful, longest-running, rarely misses a show co-host, Mr. Joseph Luzzi.
Good evening, Brian. I miss him occasionally if something does come up.
Yeah, I don't...
We do have RL, real life to contend with sometimes.
Yes, we do. And that would be why I have no video if you're watching this on Google+. Because I am currently in a hotel in beautiful Milwaukee. Actually, technically Brookfield. Nice hotel. I was getting really good bandwidth. I tried testing this out last night to make sure it would work. And video doesn't work. I mean, it does, but yeah, it was problematic. So I decided we're going to skip video for me. Nobody on the audio podcast care right now, but just in case you're watching it on YouTube or anything else, that's why. So what have you been up to this week, Joe?
Working. And working, and then doing some things on the other website, the gaming website. But at work, been playing around with some new apps, struggling with getting things to install, vendors to assist, and having some fun with automation.
That's good, because that's what I'm going to talk a lot about today.
Automation?
Yes. What kind of automation were you – what tool were you using to do your automation?
Oh, just scripts, just for like WebSphere and stuff like this, but just having a whole hell of a lot of fun with things that just blow up in the night.
Things that go bump in the night. Those are always fun.
So it's just been an interesting week, let's just say, just trying to get new things to work and old things to update.
Wonderful.
Not successfully, we'll say.
Is this in production or is this in test?
No, it's in test. Okay. So it's fine.
Right. Nobody's yelling at you.
No.
That's good.
So, but it's just been fun and interesting. What about you? You, from what I'm reading here and from what you've mentioned to me before the show, one, I'm glad you're not here with me, and I'm glad we're not doing this at your house.
Thanks. Love you too, buddy.
Hey, no problem. You can just keep all your little things to yourself. Brian, how was your week? It sounds like it was interesting.
Other than it's been really rushed because it was a short week last week because in the U.S. we have a holiday last Monday. I then worked for a whopping 2 days and then jumped in my car at some ungodly hour in the morning so that I could make it over to Pittsburgh to go to DevOps Day Pittsburgh, which I, instead of picking up the flu, somehow managed to pick up probably because of my allergies and my eyes itching. And eye infection. Yay.
yummy.
But that's actually what I wanted to talk mostly about today, was to give you kind of an update of what DevOps Days was like, what it was, who the types of people that were there were there. Talk about the fact that I managed to score 8 pretty nice t-shirts with different vendors on it.
That's a hell of a lot of swag there.
That is. Yeah, they were almost all given out t-shirts except for Sumo Logic, and Sumo Logic was giving out sumos and hats, and they were very disappointed because nobody wanted hats. Everybody wanted t-shirts. So they went home with a whole lot of hats. And I got all kinds of stickers, so my wonderful personal laptop will be not even close to covered yet, but we'll at least be a lot farther on its way, that's for sure.
We'll be adorned with various.
Yes, it will. So for those of you who aren't familiar, DevOps Days is a series of conferences that's been going on for 5 years now. Started off, the first one was in Belgium. They are held all around the world. They are two-day conferences normally. They can be longer. They can be one day, I guess. I haven't seen any that were listed as one day. They've all been 2 days. It's where all the cool DevOps kids get together to meet. Well, okay, not all of them. But a lot of people tend to show up to support these events. It was really cool to talk to people that were, A, using all the tools I read about all the time and hear what their thoughts are in production practice, like if they're actually using them. Big sponsors for the event, of course, was Chef, Puppet, were both there. So was CF Engine, was trying to remind everybody that CF Engine still exists. It didn't go away. And then other companies, newer upstarts like Ansible was there. And probably the coolest thing, and one of the things, I thought of you instantly when I saw this vendor and after I talked to them, because I talked to all the vendors. And it is a vendor called PagerDuty. So
I'm listening. I am intrigued. I'm about to do a quick Google search.
PagerDuty.com, I believe. PagerDuty is a cloud-based service that allows you to set up for a actually very affordable fee, allows you to set up all of your staff that are going to do on-call rotations in PagerDuty, and then you can set the rotation schedules. It does escalations, so if primary person on call doesn't answer, you can have it go to a secondary or escalate to a manager. If you know that, you can set your own profile up for how it contacts you. So if you're a person who's not going to hear the phone the first time or is going to ignore it the first time and then ring it a second time, you can set up custom connections to you, how they'll approach you. And then since nobody really carries pagers anymore and it goes to people's cell phones, this way you can put it into this system and then it handles pretty much everything for you. As long as you go in and put your schedules, when the schedule starts, when it stops, it's totally customizable. It takes input in a large number of ways. Probably the most common is the web service. You just post something to a web page, and then it takes it from there based on what you've set for that alert. You can have alerts alert multiple people. So if it's a web app and you want developers to get online as well and look at it as well as ops people, it's really tuned to be able to do that. So when I thought back to what we did in the day, and like the biggest hassle was having to transfer the phone around and stuff, I was like, right. Well, this is cool because now we don't have to try to get together on a Monday when we're off, when we should be transferring the pager. The system is just going to automatically at midnight on Monday morning switch over to the new person, whoever that is. So
I think it's a great idea and everything like that, but $40 a month per user if you pay it annually.
Yeah. Well, I think just that also comes
with... just seems a little pricey to me.
And it might be for... Well, you guys aren't that big, but it might be for larger companies. I'm sure there's some pricing discount to it. I just thought it was neat that somebody has actually finally taken the time to write an app like this.
Right.
That several of the presenters and stuff people that I talked to at the conference were using PagerDuty, and they said, no, it's really slick. It does a really nice job and helps our team with the work-life balance thing. And I was like, well, that's cool.
Because, like, I think one of the coolest things it could be used for is like what you were talking about with like a secondary. Because if the primary person, if the phone doesn't wake them up or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, the secondary I think is a great idea.
Well, and the other thing is too is because it's all online, so the primary person's been dealing with super big fire, right? It started at 2 o'clock in the morning. They went until, you know, 6 o'clock in the afternoon or the evening the next day. You know, if they never left home because they were working from home on this and couldn't get out the door to get to the office to give mm-hmm. somebody else the phone for the night to give them a break, you can now switch it over to somebody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know why. The only thing, and I forgot to ask them this, I don't understand why they don't have a private version, like something that you could set up on your own servers. And it may just be just not their business model, and that makes sense too. But I thought it was cool. Another big one that I thought was really cool, so one of the things that I know we looked at when I worked with you and that I've actually been asked about several times is handling dual, I want to say dual authentication, that's not what I mean, two-factor authentication.
Right, okay.
And so there's a company called Duo Security,
And they actually provide a service like that. And in the configuration for it, if for some reason it can't get to the third-party site, which is Duo Security, if it can't get to their site, then you can have fallback plans. So, you know, your fallback plan could be anything from let anybody in to just let the people that are Linux admins and fall back to your normal, you know, domain type solution. If you're a larger company and you're using Active Directory for your central authentication, you can say fall back to that, and just that one authentication, if you can't connect, is good enough. It comes with Android, iPhone, and I think even Windows Phone apps. So you can do it on your phone, you know, pull up the app on your phone and say, I need to connect to a work system. Then it'll do that. And that way you don't have to have SSH keys set up on everything. You can just use this Duo product to log in.
That sounds interesting.
Now, there were some people, of course, there's, you know, all these tools have fans and detractors. I didn't really hear any detractors, which I thought was weird, and nobody was complaining about it. Several people were concerned about, which I have already explained the answer to, but they were concerned about what do you do if that service goes down. And the guys from a hosting company called Joyent was defending them pretty staunchly and said, look, I've been using their product for almost as long as it's been in existence, and they have yet to go down. And he said, remember, this is their core competency, and this is what they do. So they are extremely redundant, and they are extremely sensitive to the fact that they understand, because they're system admins themselves, this isn't something that they can let go down. And they're very,
right.
Very cool. Now, that one, unlike the $40 per person, this is a dollar a person, I think?
Dollar for business and $3 for enterprise.
Yeah, $3 for enterprise. Enterprise does stuff like syncing up with Active Directory, I think, when I was looking at it.
It looks like it gets you phone support as well instead of just email and chat. Okay.
So that was my second cool find.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I like that.
All of the tools, really, everything I saw at the conference, all 8 t-shirts I picked up, all of them had good products. IBM was there, of course. They were talking up Urban Codes software, which is something that you're familiar with.
Very familiar with.
And from talking to them, it sounds like IBM's not pushing them to do anything strange and pretty much leaving them alone to be a self-run company, which is good to hear. They're still, for instance, headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio, which is where they were founded. They have enlarged the staff, obviously, just because they have more money to work with now. And who else did I talk to? Talked to the Puppet guys a little bit, but I had talked to Puppet before. I've used Ansible before, talked to them. They were a nice group of guys, too. But other than vendors, you know, there was a whole big thing of the conference that was going on. And it was the first time I've ever been to a conference that did, I think they called them open sessions. I've also heard it referred to as like a bar camp. It's kind of a self-organizing conference section. So every morning and up until lunch was traditional conference speakers standing up, and I'll have show notes. I'll have show notes in the show notes. I'll have a link to all the video presentations. Heard some great talks, probably 2 of my favorite, Kevin Baer's talk, who opened the conference. His talk was really good, talking about how companies are screwing up and how they should better organize, and give some tips about how to try to guide your company to do the right thing, more or less, because that's what he gets paid to do.
I guess organize. What's he organizing?
Organizing DevOps. How to make DevOps more effective. How to build bridges between ops and dev. A whole bunch of stuff like that. And then on the second day, my favorite of the talks that were there, they were all really good. You're not going to waste any time watching any of these talks. They were all good. But my favorite on the second day was Jennifer, and I forget her last name. And she was talking about Hero to Zero. And the thesis of her talk is basically everybody needs to stop being heroes. Because if you're a hero, you're not really doing anybody any service. You don't really make yourself look good in the long run, and you tend to burn yourself out. And if you're a zero, it means that you're really thinking about other people. You're thinking about yourself. You know, you're using a lot of, you know, empathy, making sure people aren't killing themselves. She was talking about, she didn't give the name of her former employer, but if you go look it up, you can figure out who it was. It was a very large internet company. And she was on call, and they had a new person who was on call. And a batch job failed that wasn't critical. He got paged for it, though, and was trying to fix it on a Sunday. And she's like, this is something that can wait till tomorrow. But he called her. When she gets into work on Monday, she looks at her phone, and on her office phone was a call from him from his office extension. So he was actually in the office on a Sunday because that's what he thought he needed to do. So she was talking about, you know, you got to watch out for the younger people and make sure that they're not doing silly stuff. You know, take care of the big problems, the things that are really problems, but a batch job that's just going to report some data for the business people that they can wait until 10 o'clock in the morning on Monday to get it. It's not going to kill them. Is not worth, you know, killing yourself for on a Sunday, basically. Work-life balance. It was a lot about work-life balance and how that is. But the best part of her talk, and the part I'll never do justice, I couldn't do justice in audio format, is all the pictures that she had and her descriptions of the different superheroes. And she goes through half dozen, maybe a dozen superhero types and then explains how each superhero is a personality that you probably know in your organization. I went through everyone and went, yep, know somebody like that, know somebody like that, know somebody like that. That's several people that I know. And just, you know, she talks about just trying to get everything down to zero if you can. You know, you want zero stress in everybody's life. Zero stress doesn't mean no incidents happen. Zero stress means you're not worried about it when it does happen. You know how to handle it, and you know that people are there to back you up, basically. So those were my two favorite talks. Well, that went a lot faster than I thought. But then, so then the other half of the day was spent in these open spaces, and they would sit there and people would nominate or walk up, take the microphone, explain what they wanted to talk about, write it on a piece of paper, and slap them all on the wall. You know, everybody would vote, and then based on the size, they had a lot of space at this conference, so we could split up actually into five or six different tracks going at once in these open source things or in these open space things. That kind of sucked because there was always like two of them that I wanted to go to at each section because there were 1 hour blocks for the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then of course, you know, we got to talk, but I got to meet some really cool people. That joint company that I was talking about had that week, that Tuesday, had a major incident. And I'm not going to try to do it total justice, but short story is, somebody typed in a reboot with an automated tool and meant to reboot two servers after applying a patch and ended up rebooting the entire data center.
Ouch.
And they're a hosting provider. So when they restarted...
That's going to leave a mark. That's going to affect the 99% uptime.
Yeah. When we say they rebooted... the entire data center, just to give you perspective, that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 servers all rebooted at once.
Oh, man.
The good news is all their automation worked, and they were back up in 32 minutes from that. Now, probably because it was a clean reboot. It just said reboot. Of the 1,000 servers, 19 of them actually needed somebody to physically touch them, and all the rest of the servers came up fine without anybody touching them. And the 19 that didn't come up were trying to come up before the servers. They do a lot of PXE booting in their environment, and the PXE servers didn't come up fast enough for these 19 servers to pick up their PXE boot environment and start running.
So they had a mini disaster recovery drill, basically.
Yes, a self-induced disaster recovery drill. The funniest part to me, they said they have fixed this. The funniest part to me was this was in their primary data center, and they had one of those oh shit moments because the only place that their website for their company was in that data center. So all their web servers went down. So they couldn't even tell anybody what was going on for 32 minutes.
Well, you have social media and stuff like that. I mean, if you're a hosting company, obviously you'd start posting out to Twitter and stuff. Somebody has a phone that you can get to.
Right.
I mean, so.
Oh, and that's what they were doing. But I was saying, like, if somebody tried to go to their website, you could to see a status page. And they were just like, it was one of the big faceball moments. It's like, seriously? We have it on like three different servers here. Nobody thought to put one of the servers in one of the other data centers. They have like four data centers. Like, nobody thought to put one of them in one of the other data centers. So they're now at least dual homed.
Live and learn. Live and learn.
So I tell you all of this because of what I thought was possibly the coolest part of that whole discussion, which was, and this was a big theme through most of the talks, you'll hear, if you go watch the talks, if you go watch the other type of talk was an Ignite talk, which I'll talk about in a minute, a blameless disaster, right? So that situation, there was actually somebody you could point the finger to and say, it was this person.
Right.
Now, this person was not a junior person. This was one of their senior staff. He fat fingered it. It was totally like one of those you hit enter and go, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, this is fucking bad. And basically, there was other expletives used that I don't want to use on the podcast, but they were like, when he described how they reacted to the thing, that what was coolest to me was literally nobody tried to place blame from the word go. Nobody asked what happened. They just, well, they asked what happened, but they didn't ask who did it. And then the whole team, he's like, well, you know, it happened in the middle of the day. So the whole team was there. The whole team was on the call within minutes going, what just happened? And what do we need to do to fix it? And he said, we had our whole team there and they all kicked in and nobody was talking about it. Nobody wanted to talk about it. He's like, I obviously know who it was because he's one of the lead engineers. So he happened to be sitting near the person when they did it. And he goes, you know, I know who it was, but we weren't going to really talk about it. It's not a problem because, like I said, he goes, you know, yeah, it was an oh shit moment. We just took out an entire data center. We feel really crappy about it, but he didn't do it intentionally and it wasn't mischievous and it wasn't, you know, like he was trying to hurt the company or the customers. It just happens. And to hear somebody talk so openly and honestly about the fact that not only did it happen, but they're never going to tell anybody who did it. You'll never know. And they got tired of people asking one of the engineers who, he said, really bad timing, but one of the engineers who's going off to work for another startup in 2 weeks got tired of everybody saying, well, who did it? Who did it? Who did it? Like, you know, everybody wanted to hang the person that did it. So he goes, well, I didn't do it, but just to get you to shut up, I'm going to say that I did it. And he's like, so it's funny. So it's out there that he says he did it. And now he's going to leave in 2 weeks. He's like, so I hope everybody doesn't think that we fired him because of it. Because we didn't fire the person. Like nothing happened to him. Nothing should happen to him. He didn't, you know, it happens. Fix it, move on. And he goes, and we were down for 32 minutes. And he was like, we were very excited about being down for 32 minutes after something like that, you know, and it's pretty impressive. I thought it was impressive. It was like, shit, 1,000 servers to be back up in 32 minutes. You know, not blowing any, I mean, they didn't even blow PDUs. They didn't blow anything. They didn't blow any power trying to reboot all those systems at once. Because you got 1,000 servers coming back, you know, rebooting themselves. That's a lot of power draw.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I'm surprised it was just 19 that they had a problem with. I mean, that's, for, especially if there's, you know, at least 1,000.
Mm-hmm. And so that was in that. We had a whole bunch of other sessions, of course, because like I said, we had three a day. So there's six that I got to attend, and there was at least four or five others going on. I got into a really cool discussion. I'm feeling very isolated working from home all the time. And they actually had I wasn't the only one, because a lot of these people work remotely. And sometimes remotely means in a small office, small satellite office. And sometimes it means working from home. And so when we're sitting there talking about it, about all this stuff, it was cool to hear other people talk about feeling the same way and talking about how they handled it. And there were solutions from everything from, which wouldn't work for me because none of my teammates are, you know, we're all suffering the same thing. We're all remote, so it doesn't work for me. But if I was working with a company like you work for, one of the solutions was they put a video camera and they have a microphone and they're using a mumble server and they have a microphone in the center of the ops area. So this person can hear all the casual conversations going on around what's going on during the day. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of talk about what they're calling chat ops. And I don't know if you've seen any of these systems yet, Joe, but chat ops is basically using a chat server to kick off jobs. So there are chat clients that'll do stuff like, if you have everything configured correctly, that's a big if. If you have everything configured correctly, you can put in a command into chat that says, go deploy X code to Y environment. And
that's interesting.
They do it for everything up through production. Because it's in a group chat room like that, everybody can see it. So nobody, if something that you're trying to work on disappears on you, you don't have to ask who just restarted all the servers, because it'll come up through the chat ops thing that so-and-so is restarting the server. And they're supposed to do all their big commands in that environment. Right. Or if you're testing an application, like if you're testing a web app and all of a sudden the web app just stops working and it appears to be for no good reason. If you go look at the chat log, you can see, oh, this happened this way. Several of them were talking about using it to make decisions like design decisions or configuration change decisions, you know, and think about how many times I know how many times I felt like we've had conversations and lost the whole backstory about why we made the decision.
Right.
So yes. By using ChatOps, you have the reason for making that decision. And then the tools have kind of evolved now, and they said you can actually tag it. So you can put a certain type of tag in there, and then one of the groups was so advanced with it, they actually have a script that goes back through the chat logs every day, and if they put the right tags in, will pull out the discussions around the different environments. So the different DevOps or the different development environments they have, the different tests, the different pre-production and production environments, they have a specific tag, and they can go back and tag, if somebody doesn't tag it at first, they can go back to wherever it started, they can insert this tag after the fact, so it'll show up in the log, and then it'll grab everything from the beginning tag to the end tag, and then pull that out into an email, or into a separate document, which some of them, there was a big debate about whether or not you should email that to everybody, because nobody's going to read it if you email it. But then at least everybody would have a copy of it and could at least search to see if something had happened recently. But it was a pretty neat thing. There was at least one pseudo demo, like it was a video demo, because obviously you can't, not that you can't, you don't really probably want to show a real live DevOps chat, because yeah, you just don't want to. First of all, it's pretty boring. Second of all, it's there could be a lot of expletives. Was one of the things they said. And it was neat. I mean, most of the people there were from small companies, less than sub 100 people.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
There were several people. One group of people I got to meet were from a company called McKesson, who makes, they're a drug distributor, and they've verticalized. So they're a drug distributor. They also sell the shelves that you see, the shelving units inside the drugstore. And the POS systems that they sell the drugs with and track the drugs and all the stuff that they have to do for legal requirements. They make that whole vertical stack. They were probably one of the bigger companies that I talked to there. There were a couple others. There was one that was looking, the really funny thing, I guess not really funny, but one of the reasons why I went was to try to see if I could find what people with Windows systems were using. And I was very clearly not in the right space for that, because everybody was either FreeBSD or some Linux distribution. Which was cool, because I fed my Linux side and I got to talk about that cool stuff. But it was frustrating too, because there were a small group of us that were Windows, or people that had Windows in their environment that had to try to support it. And we had a large conversation, and there were several large conversations even with those other companies that were primarily Linux, about what do you do about the developer, because not all developers can or are willing to develop on Linux. Most of them want to run on Windows, or if you're in a larger corporation, the standard is Windows, and there is no discussion even about Linux for the desktop for developers. So how do you handle distributing an environment that's workable for them on their local machine to do that? So we had some discussions. There were some discussions that you'll see out there on Docker, which, of course, is everybody's favorite toy right now. And another one on a lot of discussion about Vagrant. And Vagrant is a cool tool for developers or for ops people to pass environments to developers that look as close as they can to production. So you can create an image, basically, and you do Docker up, whatever the image name is, and then it will pull it down to the developer's workstation, and then they have a full stack environment. So they have the database, they have the web server, the app server, all that. If you can do it on a single box, that's fine. If you can't, then they'll have to do Docker up a couple of different machines, but they can do that kind of stuff. So they're not Docker, I'm sorry, Vagrant. Vagrant up. And there were a lot of Macs, a lot more Macs than I realized. Like, most of these people were talking about using Macintoshes as their PCs that they connected to do work, connecting to Linux environments for the servers. So, So given the fact that I tend to work in large corporate environments where it's mostly Windows workstations, it was kind of interesting to walk around and see that as I was walking around. And almost a complete non-existence of tablets. Almost nobody was using a tablet, which I thought was really interesting. Everybody had smartphones.
Yeah, because didn't we talk about that when everybody was on the bandwagon, this is going to replace everything, and you and I were both just like, it's going to have its niche markets, but no, it's not going to do what everybody thinks it's really going to do for them.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not because these people couldn't afford tablets, because they're all tech people. They're still getting paid tech salaries, so they could afford a tablet. I mean, there was one of the open spaces was, and you probably would have liked it, was around gaming. Everybody wanted to talk about what they were doing for gaming, because it doesn't have to be DevOps. There was a werewolf game that went on. somebody has now created. Have you heard about cards? I think it's is it Cards Against Humanity?
Cards Against Humanity. Yeah, buddy.
Well, there's a DevOps variant of it that's out there. So they were playing that Friday afternoon.
Yeah, the guys who did Cards Against Humanity when we were at PAX East, they actually had oatmeal packets made up that had cards inside the oatmeal packets. And I have several of the packs downstairs.
That's very cool.
That I got from PAX East, yes.
So that's the brief synopsis, that, and I just tried to condense 2 days of that into
that was
30 minutes. Yeah,
that was a lot, and that was actually a really good summary. I mean, that does actually sound like it was one of the better conferences that I've actually heard about.
You went to Impact this year, right? Was it this year?
Yeah, last year.
Oh, last year. Okay.
Last year.
You went to Impact last year. I went in 2011.
Right.
You
actually spoke in 2011, though.
I spoke in 2011. And so to compare and contrast an Impact conference, which I assume to be just like every other vendor conference. I've never been to a Microsoft conference, but I can't imagine it was that different. And from what I've seen of Google I.O., Google I.O. looked a whole lot like Impact. Mm-hmm. The fact that this is all community-based, I mean, everybody was there. Everybody was it was super. It was so positive. Such a positive, such a supportive environment. Nobody was holding back, you know, and nobody in those open spaces, man, if you brought up a problem, I don't think anybody brought up a problem in one of mine open spaces that I went to, aside from the unsolvable one of remote working, which nobody has a good workable solution for. Everybody has some ideas that work okay, but other than that talk, anybody that brought up an issue that needed to be solved, it was pretty much solved by the time they walked away. Like they had, and not just one solution either, they had two or three solutions that people would offer up and go, we did this, this is what we thought, we did X, we did Y, you know, we combined it with this, we used Chef and did this, and we did this with that. There was a lot of discussion on logging and how different people are handling it, a lot of discussion around monitoring, because those are two big behemoth topics to try to cover. Mm-hmm. And try to, you know, how do you get the proper security? Of course, I was pretty vocal in the security one because I had to take that stupid test again. And I think a lot of people, I think it helped a lot of people. I learned a lot. I mean, I feel like I know quite a bit, and I learned a hell of a lot in that. It was a lot of learning. It took me a long time to decompress. It took me almost the whole weekend, part of my flight up here to Milwaukee, to kind of really start to grasp everything that I had just heard. So if you have a chance to go to one, look on the devopsdays.org website, and you will find where they are doing their next ones. Several people that I talked to, and I talked to all kinds of people. There was a guy there that was a former Google employee. There were multiple former Yahoo employees. If you haven't heard about this, Joe, which you may not have because you're not really following the DevOps stuff, Etsy is one of, they call them unicorns. So okay. Google would be a unicorn in the DevOps space. Netflix is a unicorn. They're very rare companies where DevOps actually works really well. Etsy is probably one of the small, well, growing, but one of the smaller companies that is super high on that DevOps supply, basically. Hmm. And John Alspa, who is one of their senior members, I don't remember whether he's a director or what his role was, and I've listened to like four podcasts with him on it lately. I don't remember what his official title is, but he's considered to be the person who coined the term DevOps and described what it was based on a talk that he gave at a conference 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So his company Etsy is just really good. If somebody's looking for another podcast besides LinuxInstall.net to listen to, I can't recommend the Food Fight show enough. It's put on by the people that make Chef. Several of the leads at OpsWorks, which is the company that does Chef. Well, actually it's not OpsWorks anymore. It's now Chef. The company is now Chef too. They just changed their name recently. So Chef, the company, the people that are on there are from Chef, and they pull in people that they meet at other conferences to talk about their stuff. And there's, if you go through and look at the back episodes, there's one with the Etsy team, and man, it sounds like a cool place to work. I'm very jealous. It's a very cool environment, very, very good DevOps culture, basically. They're put up as, and they're referred to repeatedly as being what everybody should try to achieve to be. And they're very humble about it too, which is cool. They're not like dicks about the fact that, you know, we're the best, you should worship us. They're all like, yeah, this kind of works. I mean, we get it from people outside the company who don't have anything close to what we have, but we're like, you know, they're like, we're now at this point where we have this and yeah, we're not satisfied. We want it to be even better. And that's the way the whole company is. And it was really cool to listen to them talk. So check out foodfight.com too if you got something else. If you have lots of time. I don't know who has lots of time, but at least it's a podcast, so you can listen to it while you're driving and walking the dog and stuff. Just like you're listening to us, hopefully. All right, I'm done talking. How about you?
Sure.
Do you have any questions for me?
No, I don't. I mean, you kind of covered so much. I think I need to decompress and kind of absorb it all right now. I mean, like I said, it sounds like it was a really good conference. It sounds like that might be something to maybe look into going to next year, possibly.
Yeah, if there's another one in Pittsburgh, I'll make sure to announce it on there. I'm going to work with the organizer. Actually, has volunteered to mentor me on how to get talks, which was another cool thing. I talked to the nice thing about it was, so at the IBM Impact Conference, it's so big. You know, there was like, I don't know, 8,000 people or something. It was ridiculously large.
It's huge. Yeah, Impact is huge.
And the nice thing about this smaller conference was I talked to everybody. I mean, I kept missing him, but the guy, there's a new site that's getting a lot of buzz called DigitalOcean. The guy who started DigitalOcean was at the conference.
Oh, wow.
And I had like three or four people. He was like he was like a unicorn for me because I heard he was there and I kept going around and he wasn't anywhere where I could seem to catch up with him. So, but a lot of people were talking to him. Like I said, one of the lead guys from Joyent was there. He had flown in. People were flying in from all over the place too to come to Pittsburgh. I don't know what's up with that, but you know, they were all, you know, willing to come there. I shouldn't pick on Pittsburgh, but you know, I'm from Cleveland. What do you want? And it was really cool. There was all kinds of stuff. The organizers, the vendors, there was a lot of vendor support. There was only 300 people at the conference, and there was a lot of vendors. Like I said, I had 8 T-shirts, and not every vendor had T-shirts. So there was probably 12 vendors at least that actually had tables, plus the other ones that just supported it but didn't want a table. But they did really cool things like paid for one of the guys I met is like 24, lives in a small town in the middle of nowhere. It's a company town, so like there's like no user groups or anything for him to go to. They paid for his ticket. He just had to get himself there. There was a woman that they paid for her flight up from North Carolina to go to the conference and took care of her hotel and everything because she's trying to get back into the work world. It's such a different environment and so much better at celebrating what we do. And every speaker, when they walked off stage, was surrounded by people telling them how good a job they did. Cause like I said, there were a lot of good talks, and talking to them, and none of the people that were speakers were at all snobbish about it. They were all eager to talk about the topics they talked about. They were eager to share more knowledge, you know, answer individual questions if they could. They invited people if you know, the next speaker was coming on or something or we were coming, you know, getting ready to go to a break or something, they would offer to let them, you know, either go to lunch with them. I don't think anybody, you know, we were all trying to move and not talk to the same people all the time. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of intermixing and getting to meet people from a whole bunch of different companies. It was a lot cooler than I thought Impact was. Impact is just big and massive. And Google I.O., if anybody's excited about going to Google I.O., it's going to be the same thing. There's just going to be so many people there that you're going to have a hard time meeting the rock stars that are at the conference. Whereas here, there's only 300 people. The rock stars are also pretty humble, so they were there. I mean, Kevin Baer and Pete Cheslock are two huge members of the DevOps community, and both of them were there, and both of them I walked right up to and said hi to, and they were totally cool, and they talked, and it was a totally different conference experience. I can't recommend going to it. It was as good. It was probably better than Ohio Linux Fest, only because it wasn't as spread out. Like Ohio Linux Fest is a more focused conference, and that open design kind of made things a little easier too. But I wouldn't want to change Ohio Linux Fest though. It's another great conference, and again, it's pretty small. I mean, there's still only about 1,000 people going to that, so it's still pretty small. You still get to meet a lot of people. We walked up and met Jono. Remember?
Yep. That was pretty cool.
So, all right, I'm going to stop rambling now. Have a good week, everybody.
All right, take care.
Oh, wait, what should everybody go do, Joe? I almost forgot.
Install some Linux.
Bye, folks. Talk to you later.
Okay, so if you didn't notice, I was a little excited when I recorded this. I had a lot of fun out at DevOps Days, and I totally forgot to do the conclusion of the show. So Joe pointed this out to me after we finished recording, and I waited until I got back to my studio to actually finish this, and that's why we also delayed releasing the podcast until late Friday night, early Saturday morning, depending on where you're at. So don't forget, follow us on Twitter, at Linux Install. Follow us and check out our linuxinstall.net Google Plus community. And, of course, you can check out what Joe's doing over at What I'm Playing Now. And my other podcast is the DevOpsMastery.com podcast. So be sure to check those both out. Let us know. Rate us wherever you find fine podcasts like this one so that we know you're there. Because, remember, we don't ask you to listen to any ads. And we don't charge you for the podcast. So your feedback is the only way we get any satisfaction out of our job well done. So, without any further ado, I'm going to let you go now. Thanks. We'll talk to you next week. And hopefully, since I'll be home, I'll be a little more sane. Bye. This has been a production of LinuxInstall.net. All original content produced in this podcast is released under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. Please feel free to redistribute it to your friends.